You ever been forgiven of something major? My friend Brant, I've talked about him before, but my friend Brant, he's on the autism spectrum, but he's like high functioning. He's got Asperger's. I don't know if you've heard of Asperger's before. He's fine. He's a radio guy. I mean, he's very, very well spoken and well read and really smart. But he doesn't always have, like, things. He doesn't notice things. That's kind of like his thing. Like, people, he can not notice that his clothes don't match. Or he could not notice that somebody is crying in front of him because he just doesn't register those things. One thing that he doesn't register was he got a brand new car. The first time he ever got a brand new car is a VW diesel Passat or something like that. And so he loves his new car. He's so happy about it. And, it's a diesel. And you guys all know where the story is going. He puts regular gas in the motor, and he drove it for a long time. And that was pretty much the end of the engine and the transmission. And VW, he took it to the VW dealership, and they contacted VW, and they're like, this is totally your fault. And he's like, I know, I'm an idiot. And he's like, and they're like, well, but we are going to replace everything that's broken. And then he got basically another brand new car. He did it again, which is another story. But you ever been just forgiven of something major? My friend Darren, in college, I was helping him move. He was moving from Indianapolis to Illinois, and we were moving all this stuff out. And with the move and everything being so busy, their 10-year-old daughter Bethany had a pet bird, and the pet bird. She would sing and do all the bird stuff. I don't really like birds, but whatever. And hadn't clipped her wings for a while. And I guess if you clip their wings, they can't fly very far or fly at all. I don't know if this works. But anyway, they hadn't done it, and all of a sudden, she drops the cage outside, and the bird flies away. And so I thought to myself, you can help with this. So the bird had flown up into the nearest tree, and I just said, you know what? Let me see that football. And I can't throw a football. Let's just be honest. Like, I'm not a great, but for some reason, the Lord bestowed on me this ridiculous amount of accuracy, and I just nailed this bird. I was just like, whew, and the bird's like, he's like feathers flying, and the bird's like kind of stunned and kind of falls a little bit out of the tree, and then kind of shakes his head off and just flies away, never to be seen again. And this 10-year-old girl, she's like bawling, and I'm like, maybe that wasn't the best idea. Not a good choice. All right, so my thing wasn't quite on the same scale as Brant's thing. I mean, I didn't ruin a brand new car. But how about you? You been forgiven of anything? Anything major? Something big? Something undeserved? Today's encounter with Jesus comes from John chapter 8. There's a lot of question about this text. Most likely in your Bible, if you look at the notes, there is a note somewhere saying that some early manuscripts don't have this story. So the scholars are always argue about whether or not this belongs in the book of John or not. So here's the scenarios. Some people omit this story altogether. They say it's not, there's no proof that this happened. Some people move it to the end of the book of John, like as an addendum or a footnote saying, we're not quite sure where this goes, but here's this, you know, here's. And then there's some people move it to the book of Luke. They think that it was a they accidentally put it in a in the book of John, but it deserves to be in the book of Luke because this kind of matches his writing style. But most leave it exactly where it is, with the little note saying, "We don't know exactly where this goes." But most scholars, I'll say majority of the scholars, believe this story happened. So it's not like the story just made up. It's just they don't know where it belongs in the order of things. Does that make sense? So I want to get that out of the way and just say, there is some controversy about this story. But it's also one of the most famous stories in the Bible. You probably all know it, right? So, the story is great, and it's great that they left it in because the story shows us so much about God's nature, his unending love, and his forgiveness. N.T. Wright says, there is something to be said for reading this story here where it is. A lot of manuscripts do have it. John chapter 7 has Jesus teaching in the temple during the Festival of Tabernacles. And the crowds and authorities getting increasingly interested in asking who he is and what he's about. John 8 has an altogether darker tone, like the whole chapter, not just the story, with Jesus accusing the Judeans, the Pharisees and teachers of the law, of willfully misunderstanding him, failing to grasp what he's saying, and wanting to kill him because they are following the dictates of their father, the devil, which is what Jesus calls them in chapter 8. Chapter 8 contains some of the harshest things Jesus ever recorded as having said. So what has happened? It is as though Jesus has come face to face with the real problem. The chapter fits, in other words, with a change of mood brought on by something which has caught Jesus' attention and has made him realize just how steeped in their own patterns of thinking his haters had become. How devastatingly unlike God's patterns of thinking they were. So whether or not the story of the woman and her accusers originally belonged here, it certainly helps us to understand the chapter which it now introduces. The chapter as it now stands begins with people wanting to stone a woman to death and ends with them wanting to stone Jesus. Perhaps that too is trying to tell us something. So in other words, starting in chapter 8, In the book of John, the heat is turned way up. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law have determined Jesus must die, and Jesus feels it. He senses it. He knows it. Therefore, Jesus begins to press. He feels the urgency that comes with the clock. He knows the end will be here sooner rather than later. So, read with me. John chapter 8. Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning he was back again at the temple. A crowd had soon gathered, and he sat down and taught them. As he was speaking, the teachers of the religious law and Pharisees brought a woman they had caught in the act of adultery, and they put her in front of the crowd. "Teacher," they said to Jesus, "this woman was caught in the very act of adultery. The law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say?" They were trying to trap him into saying something that they could use against him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote in the dust with his finger. They kept demanding an answer, so he stood up again and said, "All right, stone her. But let those who have never sinned throw the first stone." Then he stooped down and again began writing in the dust. When the accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. Then Jesus stood up again and said, "Where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them condemn you?" "No, Lord," she said, "and neither do I. So go and sin no more." Forgive me if I've said this before, but I know church folk have probably heard this passage 1,000 times in 1,000 different ways from 1,000 different pulpits. However, take a step back and let's imagine this. Jesus goes to the temple. He causes a ruckus. This whole crowd gathers and they're listening to his teaching. They're pressing in and they're crowding out the area of the temple that they're in. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law are, well, they're upset. They're jealous. So Jesus goes. Then he goes later to the Mount of Olives. Comes back the next day. And he goes back to teaching. And all of a sudden, this larger crowd comes and they amass. And they're pressing in. And they're listening. And they're hooting and hollering or whatever it is, however it is that they're doing. And Jesus is teaching the very words of God. And people are listening and realizing who Jesus is. And some Pharisees and teachers of the law are trying to figure out how to curb this momentum. How do we stop this? Pretty soon, we're not going to be able to contain this. So they're trying to figure out how in the world do we backtrack some of this? How do we make him look bad? How do we catch him? And as Jesus is teaching, there's a commotion in the back. And they bring this woman forward. I can't imagine that. She was caught in the act of adultery. Did they give her time to throw a blanket on? Who knows? But the whole point of that was, it wasn't because they were angry with this lady. They were angry with Jesus. And they think, this is our big showdown. This is our moment. This is where we can get him. Because he's not going to condemn this lady to death. There's no way. We've got him. He's trapped. This is our moment. And if you read verse 3, as he was speaking, the teachers of the religious law and Pharisees brought a woman they had caught in the act of adultery, and they put her in the front of the crowd, and they thought to themselves, this is it. My question is, where's the guy? As far as I know, it does take two, right? Where's the guy? Why do they think it was prudent to just bring the woman? I'll tell you, it is a male-dominated society. And males were kind of protected, and women were kind of easier to hush. So, obviously, these Pharisees go in, they drag this woman off, and leave the man where he is. Who knows who he is? Doesn't say in the story. But I just can't imagine being that woman and how embarrassed and ashamed. Isn't forgiveness great? I know I'm thankful for it. I remember when Evelyn was born, my wife is a pediatric RN. She's a nurse for kids. And over her 15 years, she has seen kids after kid after kid after kid brought in with all kinds of crazy coughs and colds and things because their little bodies there's no shots yet. They're just living. And they're new, and they're fragile. And Heather's like, until she has her shots, I'm not bringing her to church. And I worked at a church at this point. And so I get up on stage, and everybody's asking me, where's the baby? Where's the baby? And I'm like, well, my wife's kind of crazy. And so she won't let the baby come until blah, blah, blah. And then they got back around to my wife that I called her crazy from on the stage, and she understandably was not too happy with me. And I was doing it, like, trying to be a joke and trying to make fun. Yeah, that didn't go over too well. And in fact, like, lots of the women in the congregation were like, "You go home right now and you apologize, so help me." I love Jesus. This story is amazing. And luckily for me, my wife forgave me. We're still married, so that's good. But this story is amazing, not just because of the fact that this woman is forgiven much, and she is, but because Jesus always reacts so amazingly to the Pharisees. I'm sure that the Pharisees were ready for a showdown. They are ready for the crowd to turn against Jesus. They are ready for a shouting match. They are ready for sides to be drawn. They've got them. They've got them. Leviticus 20:10. If a man commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, both the man and woman who have committed adultery must be put to death. Or Deuteronomy 22:22. If a man is discovered committing adultery, both he and the woman must die. And then Jesus does what nobody expected him to do, because he always does. Look at verse 4 through 6. "Teacher," they said to Jesus, "this woman has been caught in the very act of adultery. The law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say?" And while they were trying to trap him into saying something they could use against him, Jesus stooped down and wrote in the dust with his finger. Now, first century teachers, they don't have whiteboards or the cool computer things you can write on or even a chalkboard. Their chalkboard was dust in the ground. So, nobody knows what Jesus was doing, what he was writing. Everybody has an idea. Some people have guessed that he was just doodling for effect, like he was just kind of waiting for his moment, doodling in the, in the sand. Some people think that maybe he was writing the sins of those that were accusing this woman, you know, whatever, cheating, lust, you know, whatever, adultery, coveting. Some people think that he was writing their names and sins. Some people think that he was writing the law, which is, anybody? Ten Commandments, right? And this is interesting because in Exodus 31:18, Moses comes down from Mount Sinai, right? You guys remember this story? You can picture Charlton Heston, maybe. Comes down with these tablets and stone. But it said that, does anybody remember what it said? That, who wrote it? Who? No, God wrote it. Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. It's not really pointed out very much. God physically wrote the Ten Commandments on these two tablets with his finger. So, pretty neat idea that maybe Jesus is writing the law with his finger, just like God did with his finger. And maybe that again is saying, Jesus is saying, guess who I am? I'm God. But nobody really knows. Nobody knows, really. But what everyone really does know is that that was not the fight that they were expecting. Make no mistake, I think that Jesus was angry. And why? Because again, the Pharisees are keeping people from hearing God. They're keeping the crowd, they're keeping the woman, they're keeping people from focusing on what is really important, and that's him, and the fact that he's here, and that his presence is among us. And Jesus is angry, I'm sure. But you look at verse 9. It says, when the accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. You know, the old adage of one finger pointing toward you is three fingers pointing back toward me. Jesus hadn't said the law of Moses was wrong. Only that if we're going to get serious about it, we should all find ourselves guilty. And one by one, the accusers get the point, and they drop their stones and walk away until it's totally quiet. And then you see Jesus kind of pick his head up and say, "Hey, where'd everybody go?" Then Jesus stood up and again said to her, "Where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them condemn you?" "No, Lord," she said. And Jesus said, "Neither do I. Go and sin no more." I want you to notice what Jesus doesn't do here. Jesus doesn't let her off the hook, right? So, like, it's still wrong what she did, right? And I think lots of times we can say to ourselves, "Well, look, Jesus is love. He's forgiving. He's so nice. He gives us grace and mercy, and therefore we can do whatever we want." No, that's not the case. However, there is grace. And God's grace is so big and so powerful that he pours it on us because he knows that we can't do it all and we can't do it right. This story is a classic example of Jesus' own wisdom, the sort of wisdom that kings were expected to display. Remember that the underlying question of this whole part of John's gospel is whether or not the Messiah is the true king, or Jesus is the Messiah and the true king. The story turns up on the trap that the scribes and Pharisees had set for Jesus. They suspected that he would start wanting to tell the woman that her sins had been forgiven, but that would mean that he would be teaching people to ignore something in the law of Moses. They thought they had him. Already we can sense the temperature of the situation is rising, and with it is Jesus' anger. They are using the woman, however guilty she might be of serious sin, simply as a tool in their attack on him. And in so doing, they are enjoying their sense of moral superiority over her, as well as their sense of having put Jesus in a corner that he can't escape from. The story certainly doesn't mean, as some people have tried to make it mean, that adultery doesn't matter. That's not the point. Jesus' last words to the woman are extremely important. If she has been forgiven, if she's been rescued from imminent death, she must live by that forgiveness. Forgiveness is not the same thing as tolerance. Being forgiven doesn't mean that sin doesn't matter. On the contrary, forgiveness means that sin does matter, but that God is choosing to set it aside. Because he loves us, and he forgives us, and he sent Jesus for us to take away our sin, to take away our punishment, to take it all on the cross with him, so that one sacrifice could be the sacrifice for all and for all time. And it just makes me think, what camp are you in? I mean, you do realize there's some different camps here in this story, right? I mean, the first camp is the Pharisees. The Pharisees are scheming and plotting. But let's back up a little bit more. Let's look at today's modern Pharisees. You know who they are? Those people that have been Christians or in the church, maybe not even Christian, but people have been in church for so long that they are morally superior to everybody else. And they sit there and they judge everybody from afar. Or maybe to their face. And we judge celebrities, and we judge politicians, and we judge our neighbors, and we judge those people, or these people, or those people. And I know this happens all over the place. You know why? Because I look at Facebook for 5 seconds, And it's always somebody is calling out these people or those people or I wish these people would just do that or these people need to stop. And some of those people are the very people that know Jesus. And they have the very words of life to offer. But instead they point a finger and say, "You people. You person." I've been guilty of being a Pharisee in my life. If only these people would just get their act together. Have you? The other camp, one of the other camps is the woman. You know, this woman has been forgiven much, publicly humiliated, but has come close contact with Jesus and the grace and the forgiveness that he offers, and that had to be, while humiliating, a breath of fresh air. Maybe you're in that camp today. Maybe you've been laid bare. And maybe you feel beat up like this woman, but you have experienced and tasted the freedom that comes with knowing Jesus. And that today is the day, folks. Jesus told her, "Go, sin no more. Live a new life." I hope that's where you are today. If that's the case, come talk to me. Come talk to an elder. Come talk to a woman that you trust in this church. Let's get you and Jesus on the same page so that you can not only have the forgiveness of this woman, but you may live a life of forgiveness and that a breath of fresh air will every day be renewed within you. I thought the other, one of the other camps was, the crowd. You know, maybe you are just trying to figure out what this whole Jesus thing is about. Maybe you are on the outside. You don't even know if this Jesus guy is real. You don't know if this God thing is true. But you're here. And you're listening. I pray for you, if that is you today, that you would find God. There's a simple prayer, I think, that if you pray, God will answer you. If you pray earnestly with your heart, just say, "God, show yourself to me." And I believe that we have a God that will do that if you would listen and you would seek. The other group, I would say, is this group of disciples, the people that were doing the work with Jesus. And maybe that's where you are today, because you know what? There's a lot of disciples in this church. A lot of people that are working their fingers to the bone so that Jesus might become known among people of Bowen and people of Augusta, people of Plymouth. And maybe that's you. And if that's you, thank you. Thank you. You need a pat on the back sometimes. Now let's go get them. That's it. That's my sermon today. What camp are you in? Which one? You need to decide for yourself where you are today. If you have a decision that you need to make for Jesus, come forward or not. Come talk to me. Come talk to someone else. If you just need prayer, we want to do that with you. Or if you just need some encouragement, that's great too. Or if you want to encourage one of us, we could always use more encouragement in our life. But God loves you. He sent Jesus for you. He cares for you so much. let's not today go away without making some sort of decision for Jesus. Even if it's just a simple prayer, God, show yourself to me today.